All right, welcome to episode 6 of Joke Artists. Whee! I'm your host, Ryan Dever.
Yeah, and I'm Jason Katz.
Ooh, cool. And today we're going to be talking about comedy specials as a whole, because if you haven't listened to our other episodes, good. But if you have, you know that we had Mark Norman, Joe List, and Sam Morril on, and we worked on all three of them. Well, Jason worked on Mark's, and I helped out on the other two. And we had a blast working on them. So today we just wanted to talk about our experience in the comedy special production realm.
Yeah,
talking about directing and editing and all the pre-production work and the craziness and the fun. What do you think about that, Jay?
I think you've lost your mind. God sees him.
Get your hands off me! I am a knight!
Well, now that he's out of the picture, it's just you and I. Now, I'll tell you, not only was I did I direct Sam Morril's special, but I also got the pleasure of directing Joe List's. Also, I edited Mark's. And Ryan and I both co-produced Joe List's special, and he edited Joe's special. Oh, what a whirlwind of excitement. We're going to dive right in, headfirst,
into a pool,
3-foot
that's
pool,
2 feet
and
deep.
We're going to crack our necks.
Get ready to dive in, crack your neck, and go right to heaven, because this is going to be bad.
Oh, yeah. All right.
We were seeing a lot of comments on YouTube and Reddit of people saying, genuinely, I don't understand what goes into directing something like this. It's a one-man show. Like, doesn't a comedian just kind of go up there and do their thing? Like, I'm not really sure what else goes into it. Because, you know, we were promoting it saying, oh, I edited this. And Jason was saying, I directed this. You got to check it out. It's awesome. And so I'm not sure if they were trolling. But there were enough questions that we thought, yeah, actually, it is an interesting question, because there is a lot that goes into producing a comedy show. It isn't just, you know, you show up with an iPhone and you know, pick a side of the room and you start shooting.
Which we did do. We just showed up with iPhones and picked a side of the room.
Yeah, I mean, we did that.
You know, so we want to pretend that it was more than that.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you had a Samsung at the time.
Yeah.
And I had an iPhone, and the frame rates and the color never match up. But, you know, the audience never knew.
No.
Yeah. And we also shot the behind the scenes on a Nokia flip phone.
I had, in between
playing Snake.
I couldn't film because I had that Nokia from The Matrix that you press the button on the side and it slides open, whatever that was.
Yeah. And it kept sliding out of your hand and falling under the ground.
Yeah. It was spring loaded.
You kept saying, I don't want to pick it up. I'm going to get another phone.
Yeah, I was really into phones a couple months ago. I'm glad I got through that and over it.
Yeah, I'm glad that you're over it too. It was, it got bad.
So, you know, this kind of started with your friendship with Mark, right? So you guys met, I think when he was on the show, you guys met maybe 7 years ago?
Me and Mark Norman, I met him, I don't know how many years ago now. I met him, I think it was the first year he did Conan. And I saw him and I was like, wow, who is this guy? And, you know, I thought he was just so funny. And I think I emailed him or something like that. And I asked him if I could do a documentary on him. And he repeatedly said no. And I begged him. No. he said yes. And I was like, cool. And so I just started filming him and I have been filming him for years and still am. Whether he realizes it or not, I'm always filming. And then along came this show, Ryan, this show that Joe List, Sam Morril, and Mark Norman wanted to pitch to Netflix or, you know, any outlet.
Yeah, so they were pitching, they were trying to create a show that was going to be a comedy show in a club with the three of them performing. They each would do 20-minute sets. So Mark had thrown your name out there, to direct and shoot. And then you had hired me, and then we'd hired another shooter. And so that's how we kind of met Sam and Joe. We worked with them on that. And that was just one night of shooting.
Yeah.
And then I cut the sizzle for him.
Oh, we did.
I think it was just one night. Oh, yeah. No, yeah. That was the reshoots, right?
Yeah. And, but yeah, I mean, I had met Sam and Joe, you know, through the years, through Mark, you know, a bunch of times. And we got to talking about him doing a comedy special. And then you and I, we just sort of talked to him and he asked us about, you know, directing it. And we met with him a couple times and on how it would go and all this other stuff and price things out and all this other things. And, yeah, then eventually he gave us, I guess, the green light and went with us. And,
so that's kind of where the directing starts. You know, normally you'd think with a film or something bigger budget, the director kind of has, you know, works with the visuals. He works with the actors or, you know, the talent, stuff like that, and directs in that way. We kind of had to be, you had to be a director, also a producer. And because it's low budget, you work with what Sam or Joe can afford, and then it gets approved and you kind of move forward on getting equipment and having to test out equipment and having to meet with the club and see the space. And it just, it balloons. It's not just showing up and setting up cameras. It's
right.
Making it's sure of, you get the look right.
There's a lot of pre-prep. There's a lot of, you know, pre-production that goes on with these things. And just with Sam's, like, you know, meeting him and talking to him, even the, you know, the night where we sort of decided, you know, that he wanted to do a special and we were seeing, you know, if he could sell it somewhere, and then he decided to self-produce it before selling it, which was really cool. And I remember, you know, discussing wardrobe with him. You know, he was, you know, giving him advice on what he should wear, and then he would text me pictures of what he was thinking about wearing. And, you know, eventually we decided on something that would, you know, show up better on camera. You know, and then you and I with the gear, like, as you mentioned, like, since we were doing it on a lower budget, these specials, you know, we had to be our own gear testers and physically, you know, rent all the gear, just, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars worth of expensive lenses, like really expensive lenses. 'Cause we wanted this thing to look sharp, even though it was so-calledly like low budget. We wanted it to look like it wasn't to a certain degree. And, you know, we got really expensive cameras, you know, expensive lenses, fortunately, and they were worth it. I mean, they were very, very sharp and really nice. But the hard part is about renting these lenses and renting these cameras. You know, you have to approach these rental houses and tell them your background, because they want to know, why should we let you guys have all this expensive equipment? Because even with insurance, they still want to know reasonings why. And, you know, I remember the struggle of during Sam's of renting all this gear, renting all these wires and these tripods and all this stuff on our own, and explaining why we wanted it. And we would speak to this rental house and they'd be like, you know, well, I'm not sure, and blah, blah, blah. And then it would go back and forth for a little while. And then, you know, eventually we got the stuff. But even when we got this stuff, we still didn't have the stuff. Like, when we would go to these rental house and test out the lenses and test out the cameras, because we just wanted to make sure we were getting everything we wanted. And, you know, we have to obviously make sure the equipment works before taking it too. And there was such a struggle of getting the stuff, because one person at the customer service would say, yep, your order's ready. And you'd speak to somebody else next day and they were like, well, I don't have anything. I don't have any papers ready. And you're like, what?
Yeah. And be like, this shoot's in 2 weeks. Like, we need this to be. And then, hey, the shoot's in 2 days.
Yeah. And be like, shoot's tomorrow. Like, where's the stuff? You know, it was really frustrating.
And balancing it with insurance, you know, you basically, you know, let's cut to the end in the sense that everything gets approved. We have all the equipment we need, but then we find out we need an extra cable. And just that cable sends us over what we were going to be insured for and over budget. And then we'd have to think, okay, what can we cut? Or can we then, we now have to get approved this $15. And it was literally a cable. And then we had to go there and check out to see if we actually needed it. In a sense, directing is all before the shoot.
Right. This was all the stuff we did before, like, you know, all the producing of that, then working with lighting, working with sound, working with the art designer, the background, all that stuff, and, you know, cohesively working together so we can find a balance of how this should look and how this should feel, and, you know, even to where Sam should stand and his movements, so we can know to track him. Because, you know, Sam's not, you know, a super physical comic. Like, he doesn't, you know, get down on the ground and do, like, you know, some stuff.
Yeah, he's not like Cat Williams, who's sprinting back and forth.
Right. He does resemble Cat Williams, but he he isn't him. But I don't even get that. But I thought you said Cat Robin Williams.
Right.
Like a well, cat
I,
version
I was
of
thinking
Robin
Williams.
Williams
also.
Yeah, I thought you said like a cat version of Robin Williams.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's anyone's cat. Cat Robin Williams. Like, someone's like, come here, Cat Robin Williams.
Not yet.
All right. Cat Robin Robbie Williams. Okay. Cat Robbie Robin Serena Williams.
Cat on a hot tin Serena Williams.
Yeah. Kit Kat Robin Serena Williams.
Kit Kat Robin Thick Williams.
Thick?
Robin Thick.
Oh, damn. All right. Kit Kat Robin Allen Thick Serena Williams.
Wow.
We've definitely lost every listener that was there. But if we haven't lost you, so, you know, all that stuff. And it's funny that, because, like, so if you're directing, you know, let's say some big budget production, right? The director is not touching the gear until it's there on set. You know what I mean? The director will look at the list and he'll definitely tell you what the lenses mean. It's more director photography, but he's not physically, or she's not physically picking up the lenses. So, you know what I mean? Like, this was a lot of stuff that you and I did, you know, physically driving the equipment to places, lining, you know, tape down on the floors, a lot of stuff just to cut corners to make this thing look and feel really, really good.
And stay low budget.
But stay low budget, yeah. But we were fortunate enough to work with some really great people, like, you know, the art directors and lighters and the audio guys, like we were saying. So, you know, they also made it look and sound so good. And, you know, Liz from the Comedy Club, from the Cellar, you know, being so cool,
yeah,
and allowing us to check out the clubs, because we went there, you know, obviously a while before, and shot stuff on our phones just to see what it would look like and the angles we wanted to choose and where we would place the cameras, because we still wanted to fill the club up to a certain extent.
Right, and we had to be mindful of the waiters and waitresses that were going to be going around during the show. And
yeah, like, would that be present? Would we stop them? And I believe for Sam's, I think we stopped them from being present at all. I think so. And we aligned the front row, all the chairs. We aligned everything completely different from how they normally do it.
That was the difference between Sam and Joe. Sam, there was no drink service during the show. It was only before.
Right, and during Joe's, I think before Joe's, Joe List's, correct me if I'm wrong, Comedy Central was there filming their stuff like maybe a day or two before, and, you know, we got to see what their setup was like, and honestly, it wasn't that much different, besides obviously their cameras, they're not
slider.
Any better or anything like that. It was just that, it was wild, because you see this TV production, and the only difference was that they had a slider, you know, a really heavy slider, and we chose not to get a slider because we wanted our fourth camera operator, Steve Nahorniak, and he's great, just, you know, amazing camera guy, multi-Emmy winning camera guy, he's done just so many things, and we wanted him to have a more sort of like a behind the scenes sort of look to his camera, and that's not what I really mean. I don't mean behind the scenes, but I mean, like, I don't know how to not sound pretentious and say the word avant-garde, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he was off tripod. It was handheld. We wanted a little bit of that, kind of capture that rugged feel of a comedy club, of you're there, voyeuristic meets Saving Private Ryan meets, you know, it's just, yeah, it just creates an, it's an ever evolving shot, which, yeah, you know, when we have three cameras on tripods, that they look great, absolutely, but it just, it makes such a difference to have, makes such a difference to have a fourth shot, or even if it's your third shot, one shot that kind of is evolving. So you could have a slider that's constantly changing perspective in a sense, or like what Steve did, he's kind of running around the club, getting different angles, different feels, changing the depth of field, you know, just, and so good at it. And that's what made this easy, was the people we were working with, we trusted, and especially the camera crew that we had hired, to help us
Steve
out.
Steve Horniak and Cameron Bossart, like both of them, you know, so good. And the difference between Sam Morrell's and Joe List's special is that for Steve on Sam's special, he was doing it all shoulder mounted, and on Joe's, we were able to budget it and adjust stuff, so we were able to give him a safety, like one of those harnesses, a big body harness. I can't think of the word at the moment, but so it keeps your shots even more stable, takes some pressure off the camera, so you're not killing your shoulder all night. And and I really loved some of those shots like that Steve got. They were just between, you know, they were like between just the cracks of people laughing. Like it was between like one head and another head sometimes. And it would be sometimes these big wide shots, or he also got so many establishing shots outside and so much slow motion stuff. I don't think of any of that stuff, some of that stuff wasn't used, but it was just, you know, it was just really good. And it gave, I think, you something that you normally usually don't see. And not, there was nothing standard about it. And I sort of liked that a lot, where it really was like, hey, you're sitting in the audience.
And absolutely. And I think what's good about what Steve did was the way he shot, aside from having harness to just a shoulder mount from, you know, going from Sam's to Joe's, was that those shots that he gets does help separate the two specials. So Sam and Joe's were filmed in the same location.
Yeah, the Comedy Cellar.
Yeah, in New York City. And he was doing basically the same thing, but you're not going to get the same result each time, which is cool. So you're making your shots unique. It guarantees that. So that was that's what kind of helped us distinguish and not have to worry about how is this going to be different from Sam's. Now, going into Sam's,
yeah,
we knew that
how
he
physically
wanted,
going to look different. Yeah.
Right. Because we knew that color palette wise, Sam wanted a more black and white kind of feel.
Right. And he wanted more, I guess, a flatter color tone.
Yes.
And then Joe, I think we chose to make the color differently, or, you know, day of. And then you, Ryan, during the editing process, chose a color scheme that you like, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So it was, I mean, again, we didn't edit, Sam's, but you know, the art, he worked with an artist who had created that backdrop, that city backdrop that you see behind him in his special. And he wanted the feel to kind of match that black and white flat look, kind of, you know, Woody Allen ish, you know, Manhattan style. Whereas Joe was,
because, oh, and also about that, remember about that New York City backdrop, originally Sam had a whole cartoon for his open.
Yeah, that's right.
His whole show open was a cartoon. I don't remember if it was all black and white, but it
I think it was.
It went right into that background. It fit into that background. And then ultimately that whole cartoon, even though it was done, it was cut. It never made it into the final cut, I think, because we were just kind of like, hey, let's just get into the comedy. You know, like, this is, you know, it's just so funny. Let's let people watch it already. And I think that might have been the reason why it was just ultimately cut out.
Maybe, yeah. It could have been. I think that is like a shift in video content as a whole online now, whereas I feel like a couple years ago, even with TV shows, you have the longer intros and stuff like that. Whereas now more viral, not viral content, but just digital content, you press play and it starts. There's less of like a huge graphic and people kind of like play things down a little bit more and just get you right in the action. And I think maybe, you know, maybe that was a choice of the time, the zeitgeist.
It was just so weird that it was just like, originally, you know, what I had seen, I think you saw too, was that this was going to be the show open. And so we sort of based some stuff around that show open, like the coloring and all that other stuff. And it's funny that it was ultimately cut, but, you know, obviously didn't affect the special whatsoever.
Right. And again, we, you know, also shot it in a way that if he did want to put color into it,
yeah, you
know, they could.
Yeah, we shot it completely flat, so we were able to adjust the color however we wanted. But we didn't color that one, but the editor would have been able to adjust it however he wanted.
Right.
But as far as Joe's special, you know, at that point now we had directed Sam's. I had edited Mark's, Norman's special, and so we had these two done, and Joe's now was going to become, you know, we thought maybe a little bit easier because we had already done this and gone through
we've done all the prep work right. for that location.
Yeah, for that location. But I will say, doing Joe's, so it was up in the air. It was back and forth. You know, there's a lot of, you know, you got to talk to people's agents, and it was a lot of back and forth of how much, you know, what this is going to cost, and you know, will we get the gig or not? Will it go to somebody else? And it sort of, you know, went back and forth for a while. I remember I was in California at the time filming something, and, something, you know, I was sketchy. On the phone with them. What's that?
Something sketchy.
Oh, yeah. Filming something very sketchy. I was going back and forth with them on the phone, you know, the agents trying to figure out, you know, what this was going to cost. And since you and I were co-producing this one, Joe's, we also had to, you know, do the all the pre-prep work, you know, all the gear again.
Yeah.
And just to keep costs down. And that's what's the amazing part, is that, like, so a lot of times, you know, not a lot of times, every time, there'll be PAs everywhere. There's just a job for everyone. But we were like, all right, Ryan and I were like, all right, we can take on all this stuff, you know, ourselves, and then have our two other shooters come, you know, day of, and, you know, help set up and do what they have to do. But the
take the place of that PA demand,
stuff,
yeah.
Yeah, but the pre-prep for all this stuff was, you know, a ton of work. It was just days worth of works. And the same thing again with Joe. You know, we went over a wardrobe of what he would wear, and came down to, you know, his jacket and shirts, and you know, and lighting wise, again, the same thing. You know, you want to make sure that you're not, like, you know, casting shadows all over his face, or if he's going to turn around, you want to make sure, okay, I'm still going to be able to capture his expression.
Yeah, and you had to get a look at them while they were on stage.
Yeah, and you need to know why you're capturing what you're capturing. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to go, okay, does this joke need to be close up on someone's face? You know, is someone going to be jumping or something like that? But it's all about, okay, do I need to see the expression on someone's face for this joke to make it be better, or does it, or is it just work on his own without that, without some sort of close up or push in or some sort of cut? And the best part about it was that you were able to edit Joe's, and that's we were like, wow, this is going to be cool, because now we have full range of, I get to direct it and you get to edit it, and we both get to produce it together. And we have all those thoughts. Because originally, Joe's special, you had cut it a completely different way.
Yeah. So, I mean, just to the point you had mentioned before of you know, camera, visual choice. Should it be tight for this joke? Should it be wide for this joke? I think, maybe people know this. Maybe it's pretty common, but I think a lot of people don't know that you do film multiple shows. So the special is not just one show. So what we did for both Sam's and Joe's is you have two shows back to back, two different audiences. So in one instance, you're fighting a different audience. So you don't want to kind of reveal that too much. You still want to have the illusion that it's one show in sequence. But to what Jason was saying before is, and this lends itself to the directing, is while he's filming and he has a monitor that he can see everyone else's shots,
right?
He has to keep in mind, let's say we're in show one. Okay. During this joke, I remember that I was tight. I remember looking at the monitor and Ryan was really wide and, yeah. and Cam was medium he definitely wasn't, but let's say, oh, Steve was behind a pole and didn't get it. I know that in between show one and show two, I got to go tell Steve, I need you to be on the left side for this part. Ryan, like when we get to this part, we're going to go wide. And then, you know, we had headsets. So when those jokes would come up, you'd hear over the, you know, your headset, Ryan, stay wide here, or Ryan, go in closer. Cam, where you are is perfect. I'm going to back out so no one changed their angles. So there's a lot of that going on. And luckily you have the safety of filming two shows
right.
to kind of hide that and make sure you get any kind of visual angle, tight, wide, medium that you can possibly get. It allows you to do that.
Right, because normally someone's in something called a video village is what they call it in a production where it's, you know, all the angles. But, you know, it's funny you bring it up because I completely, like, forgot about it because it's all a blur because it just went so fast that, you know, I'm not only am I filming, but, yeah, there's a monitor next to me with everybody's angle. So I'm continuously looking at both and, you know, on my own shot and trying to talk to you guys at the same time. And not nerve-wracking at all, though, because... I know it sounds sarcastic, but it really isn't.
I'm so fucking tough.
Yeah, yeah. No, but really, because I just trust all of you guys so much and the angles you would get that I'm like, okay, you know, this is going to be great. And it's tough to, you know, have that much trust in someone else's shot because you go, okay, like, you know, if someone messes up, we don't get a redo. We are doing it live. We can't go, hey, Sam, could you do that joke again? We didn't get it. But, you know, you guys are just so good that obviously it just makes it so much easier because, you know, everyone's got a great background of all the things that they've done. And And not only that, it's just, I don't know, everyone, you know, we're all fans of comedy.
Right. We all get it. Like we've been yeah. around that, so we know what yeah. what's involved.
And we've listened to Sam Morrell's and Joe List's set, you know, so many times, so we know in our heads, okay, they're going to do this joke, they're going to do this joke, they're going to do this joke, and that's also a major part of the prep is listening to it because it gets adjusted quickly, and it can get adjusted at the drop of a hat if somebody says something in the audience or if a line is flubbed or whatever, then we go okay. We have to now do a pickup or we have to, which is, you know, ask them to start it over or say some other part or.
Right. So that can happen where like a joke maybe doesn't go well or the comedian like messes up a word and they pause and they go, all right, this is going to be a little odd, but we're going to redo that joke. And then, right. you know, the that, audience that, also
that,
gets
it. I don't think happened for any of the shows, right?
I don't think so. I think, yeah, the only thing it was at the end of Sam's, we just wanted to get. I think we wanted to get more applause
yeah,
just for audio.
We want audio and we wanted to be able to end this thing on a cleaner note because I think it ended too abruptly.
Right. So we just had him exit twice.
Right. But then the biggest thing and I don't want to skip ahead. And for you listeners, I know that you're like, what the fuck is this guy talking about? He's jumping from one thing to the other, but be patient. But I will say
there's
though,
nobody here.
Yeah. But I will say though, that the one thing is though with Joe's, and I was trying to bring this up before, is that the editing for Joe's was so funny and special because there was a whole big, not mess up, there was a whole big detour. And Ryan, if you want to talk about that, since you cut it.
No. I declined to answer. No. Yeah. My counsel advised me not to speak on that. No, yeah, it was cool. So there were, when I was cutting it, there ended up being two cuts. Joe's version and then the version that went to Comedy Central that you know Joe and his agents and management team agreed would just be a cleaner cut. But I believe it was during the first show of the two shows we were filming for Joe where mid show he realized that I mean everything was segueing perfectly well. You wouldn't even yeah. know that he had deviated from his own plan. This is just, obviously he knew that he had skipped over a couple jokes. But to the audience, you wouldn't know. And mid-show, he was like, oh shit, I just realized I forgot a huge chunk of material. I'm going to go back and do it and squeeze it in, and we'll see how this goes. And the crowd like lost it. And,
they loved
you know,
it.
In that moment, they loved it because you feel like you're a part of something that no one else is going to be a part of, you know? So like that,
yeah.
That next audience that comes in, they're not going to have the same experience that first audience had. And that's what's so great about comedy is it's every show, anything can happen, and delivery always changes. Everything's slightly different.
Right.
So in Joe's version, we kept it clean. So, you know, I was changing camera angles and all that stuff, but I kept in the flub and I allowed him to try to work his way back and kind of kept it true to form.
Yeah. And that, I love that. That was really funny to me.
It made it really unique, and it really, you know, when Joe was on, we had mentioned that it fit with the title, I Hate Myself, because it in that kind of character, because in a sense, he's a character of himself on stage, it fit that tone of, oh God, I hate myself. Like, I can't believe I let that happen. But it was not, like you were saying, it wasn't a flub. It was nothing that, like, you know, when you see a comedian get on stage and they mess up a joke and they're like, ah, damn it. And then there's kind of like this weird energy. It almost seemed, and it's not, it wasn't scripted, but it almost felt that way because he's such a professional. All these comedians are such professionals that it didn't stop him. It didn't throw him off. He just kept going and made it work, and it made the special so unique. So I believe when his album comes out, which is in, I think the first or second week of October, I could be wrong. You can go to Joe List's Instagram to find out, or his website. But he's releasing the album of the special.
Yeah.
And the album is going to be that version, that original version that Jason
cut.
And I loved and Joe loved initially, that initial cut, which is our favorite cut.
Yeah. And it was just so funny because it almost seemed like his, and again, I don't want to call it a mess up. I don't know what to call it, but it almost seemed like it was a joke in itself where I'm like, wow, like, is that part of the act? Because everyone was just laughing so much. I was laughing, and I mean, I knew it wasn't, I knew there was nothing intentional, obviously, about it, and it genuinely was a forgetful moment, but I was like, wow, this is just so funny, and it's not funny like blooper, it was funny like, this is another joke, and maybe his forgetful, him forgetting that chunk will, you know, maybe this is not real, maybe this is part of like a script or something like that in his head. But obviously that wasn't the case, but it just seems so funny and natural that I do wish that it was left in, but at least people will be able to hear it on the audio CD.
Yeah, because I was bummed towards the end when we decided to move on with a different edit, and I had to kind of basically take out the flub and make sure that it was all properly in sequence based on, you know, the script of jokes he had prepared.
Which also is like a continuity thing, because now you have to know, it goes into another part of filming these, you know, you got to go, okay, you know, how many water bottles are going to be on stage? Where's the stool? Where's the mic? Is it in his left hand? Is it in his right hand? Because some of those things, you know, a lot of people might not notice them, but there could be that some people that are, and what you don't want to do is throw somebody off because of some sort of continuity issue or editing issue. You don't want to throw somebody off if they're looking left, and then when it cuts to the angle, they're looking right or they're looking down, because you don't want people to be aware, obviously, at all that time has passed, and you don't want your cuts to be noticeable.
Right.
So that was also something that, you know, we were always thinking about while filming and, you know, directing these.
Post-production wise, the only thing that was nerve-wracking with Joe List's special was we filmed it kind of the week that Corona was starting to become a very real thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was no mandate of no one going out yet. You know, nothing, we didn't do, obviously, break any code or quarantine laws or anything like that.
The only thing
that
was talked about was keep washing your hands.
Right.
So that was really it. It was just keep washing
It was really just keep washing your hands.
So that's what we were doing, literally filming, you know, you're meeting people as they come in, you're shaking everybody's hand. Hi, how are you? And running to the bathroom, washing your hands, going back to where you need to be.
Right. And we finished filming, and obviously after you finish filming, it's time to start editing. And that's when quarantine hit.
Yeah.
And it was a very strange experience because we didn't get our audio. We needed communication with the Comedy Cellar, and because the city shut down, it was delayed a little bit before I could even get started cutting it. Yeah. And trying to make sure, one, everyone was okay and healthy, but trying to track people down was difficult because people were leaving the city. People were going all over to kind of avoid being stuck in their apartments or stuck wherever they didn't want to be stuck.
Right. Also, the businesses had shut down as well.
Yeah.
So people didn't need to be.
So it was, yeah, I mean, it was editing the special was delayed about a month.
Yeah. It was delayed for a while, and then, you know, it took a while to sell it and see where it was going to go and all that other stuff.
Which we don't want to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Summer is over and fall is upon us. And in New York City, at least, you know, restaurants are starting to open. But guess what? In a few months, maybe, we won't have to wear masks anymore. And it's going to be really shocking when we all take our masks off and we see that we've aged. I know Jason and I are now completely bald and we're full, riddled with wrinkles. Good Lord.
I look like a California raisin. I want a Snapchat filter for real life that permanently...
Well, you know the closest thing to that.
Yes.
Plexiderm. With Plexiderm, all you need is 10 minutes and you can look 10 years younger. Plexiderm is a clinically studied serum that gives your appearance the right kind of changes.
What's crazy about Plexiderm is that it will make you look 10 years younger. So if you are 10 and you do take this, you will no longer be born. Or you'll be zero. I don't know. Be wary of how old you are while putting this cream on, because you will technically go back in time.
By the way, it visibly reduces wrinkles, fine lines, and even under eye bags in minutes. And the results will last 4 hours. You can try a 6-application trial pack for just $14.95 with free shipping when you visit triplexiderm.com and use the code BELIEVE. Again, that's triplexiderm.com and use the code BELIEVE, BLEAV, at checkout.
And I'm checking you out. So Mark Norman's special, I forget at the moment, but I know it. I think it has over like 3 million views right now. You know, it's hilarious. And about filming his special, I'm sorry, about editing his special. Originally, his special that Amy Schumer produced, I was supposed to edit it originally, and then last minute I didn't get it. I didn't get the gig, and somebody else got it. So I just, you know, filmed behind the scenes stuff on it, and we put some commercials on YouTube, and then I had a funny idea if like he would deface his own comedy poster. I was like, oh, because there were subway comedy posters in the New York City subway system. There were posters everywhere, and Comedy Central had put these posters out of him, you know, for his other special, the one that Amy Schumer produced, and I pitched him this joke where, you know, two ways where either it looked like he was about to deface a poster, and when the camera pans out, widens out, he's obviously defacing his own poster, and he's writing hack on his forehead, or he's about to write hack on the poster and it's already written there that somebody else had written it. He liked the idea, so we went with him. We filmed these little, you know, funny promos for the special. Those were fun. But then, so for this, when I found out he was doing this other one, when he told me, I was like, you know, I'd love to cut it. And he was like, yeah. So that's how I got that gig. And it was funny because I didn't know exactly when his special was going to be, because originally he had asked me if I wanted to direct it, his special. And I did.
Right.
I was like, hell yeah. And then I'm not sure exactly what happened. I can't really remember, but some other team did. And I was in LA at the time doing some shoot, and I was just walking down the street, and he happened to be walking down the same street in LA. It was very weird. And we were just both like, what? Like, no way. And I was like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm going to a meeting right now, you know, because we're shooting that special like in a day or two. And I was like, what? No way. And, you know, he told me about it, and he was like, you know, you want to edit it or whatever. So I was like, yeah, definitely. So then, you know, we all talked and worked out.
This was after
stuff.
you you guys fought in the street because you're like, what do you mean I'm not directing it?
Do you know who I am?
And I literally didn't know who I was at the moment because I hadn't taken my pills.
Right. And that's why he didn't ask you.
Right. And I said, hello? I kept calling him Clark for some reason. and I was talking to his dick. And he was like, geez, man, it's me, Mark. And I was like, Clark? Then, you know, after 45 minutes of him resuscitating me, I came to and I said, hey, can I edit your special? And he was like, yeah, I guess so. I took, I guess so as a legal, term of yes.
Like a binding,
kind of binding thing. Agreement. Absolutely. Yeah. So, I held him to it, literally held him down. And I forced him to give me the footage and I cut it.
you cut him and then cut it.
Yeah. He's no longer with us, but he would appreciate right. the amount of views that it had gotten. If anyone's seen Mark or heard him, it's all, we've taken lots of audio over the years and we've manipulated it to sound like he's still doing the podcast and still alive and, rest is a hologram. Yeah.
He is alive and well.
But yeah, no, either way. So I had such a fun time cutting that thing. And again, I wasn't there for the shooting. I didn't know what was going to happen. But for his, so they shot a whole opening, a whole, really funny opening. I cut it. I wasn't the keenest on it. I was like, I don't really understand why we'd have this. Cause I feel like let's just get into this special. Eventually all that stuff was cut. I don't know. I don't think he ever showed it to anybody. All the intros were cut. The outro was cut. And you know, we just cut the special and it was great. And, I forgot where it was shot somewhere in LA, but that was interesting. That was cool. And what the best part about that was that I was able to single-handedly cut it on my own and just send him and the company all the, you know, versions of it, of how I wanted to do it. And, pretty much just went from there. And then me and Mark went back and forth of him going, oh, I think, you know, show two has a better joke here. And, people laughed more in show one at this joke. And so, you know, we would combine, the shows, but again, that's a continuity thing, especially now because we didn't direct this and Ryan and I didn't shoot this either. And we had literally no part of it besides me editing it. So I had to then cut things so they would be seamless and no one would know. Obviously they're from two different shows and, all that stuff. And that was only three angles. That was less than what we had done. So, you know, it was a little harder, but, it was still a lot of fun. It was still great. And I love the audio mix that 800-pound gorilla did. I think they may have been the ones who directed and shot. I can't remember, but, that was really cool. And that was a lot of fun. And, the coolest part was that Mark wanted to do this whole opening and eventually this other opening, another one that I hadn't cut. Eventually we just didn't do it because it was just coming down to a timing issue. And it was also, it was a lot of work and we didn't need to do that. But what was cool is we were able to do these two promos. One promo he did with, Matt Salaklus, I believe. And that was great where he was doing this thing where he would, run through Times Square. And this is during the pandemic, so he would run through Times Square where it was empty.
It was like Vanilla Sky. Yeah.
Yes. Parody Vanilla Sky. And that came out great. I just did a little bit of cutting on that, but, somebody else mostly cut that. But then I was like, hey, let's do a, we both agreed on doing a full trailer. And then I was kind of like, oh, maybe we can do like a fake sort of movie-esque trailer kind of. And then we both had the idea of like, hey, let's be honest and talk about all the places that didn't pick this up, because it went back and forth about picking this up because we were hoping maybe Comedy Central would pick it up or Netflix or just somebody. And eventually, unfortunately, I wouldn't say unfortunately because I think it did so, so well and still doing well, but nobody picked it up. So we did this thing of like, you know, Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, BET, Pornhub, or whatever, of all the places that, you know, didn't pick up the special, and that he was giving it away for free. And that was, I thought, pretty genuine and funny and cool because, you know, Mark's a very honest guy. And we're like, all right, look, no one's picking us up. Might as well, you know, do this trailer like that. And that was a lot of fun. And we got to put that out on YouTube and then ultimately released it on YouTube. You know, 4K, great thing. And what the collective comments on all three of these are, is that how are these free? And that's what everybody always says. How are these free? And I think the same thing. I go, I don't understand, because I'll see something on Netflix that you're like, this person got like $70 million for doing it, you know, and they only did one take. You know, that's not true, but
yeah,
you know,
they don't say that.
Yeah, but they got, you know, like $10 million, whatever, and you go, wow, and these guys hilarious, and you know, they're self-producing it to a certain degree. Actually, no, not to a certain degree. They're self-producing it, and you know, yeah, and you go, I mean, wow, and you look at the numbers, and you go, why wouldn't, you know, this network not want millions of viewers on theirs? I don't know why. I can't answer that, obviously.
Well, that's what's funny is you look at Amazon and Netflix and you see all these comedy specials that obviously look great. They have, you know, crazy budgets.
Yeah.
You know, they have sweeping crane shots. They have all this stuff, a packed theater, all this stuff.
Yeah.
And then you watch it and you go, wow, it's been 20 minutes. I haven't laughed yet.
Or you like it and you go, I did laugh. And then it's over and you're like, oh, that was really funny. Okay, it's over. And then you go, wait a second. Why did a studio spend hundreds of thousands to do this when it doesn't need it? Because when it comes down to how funny the person is in the comedy and to make it look good and sound good, doesn't need to cost what it cost. And it's evident because you watch those and you see the view count and you see the view count going up. So you go, okay, it's about the comedy. It's not about the budget that you put into it. And that's why I go, okay, these networks should, and hopefully, I don't know, hopefully they realize they don't necessarily need that. And then they also hire us. That's Jason Katz, well, Brian Dever, or DeVere, however you want to say it.
However you're feeling of saying it. But yeah, no, that's, and that's a product of this new world we're living in, of every studio is realizing, all right, we've got to do Zoom with Kelly and Ryan, and it's going to look terrible, you know, but we got a show, the show must go on.
Yeah.
You don't need to be spending this much for quality content. And
right.
And as long as it's not, I guess, noticeable, like in college, we had a professor that said, like, you know, the greatest compliment I can give you, say I was working the audio board, was
he said,
that.
Yes, you got a sweet ass.
Yeah, he goes, that good big sound, old ass by the you way, got. Too. He goes, yeah, he's like, mwah.
And
but
that
he said,
was the guy you had an affair with, right?
Well, he's here, honey. Would you like to say something? Yeah, I want to talk about that big old ass.
Wow.
Yeah, he's all about
sweetheart.
That big old ass I got.
Wow. You got that big old ass.
I'm Casey Kasem and that big old ass.
This song goes back to 1972. The
about
the
Shondells
and that big old ass.
The Supremes with big old ass.
Baby, baby,
big old ass.
Where did your ass go?
Where did it go? I guess that's big old small ass. But anyway.
They hit it.
They hit it. Oh, right. Yeah, because they want to keep it. Yeah. They don't want anybody else to get that big old ass.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know what the hell we're talking about. Yeah, no.
You were saying before I rudely interrupted?
Yeah, so he had this saying of the best compliment I can give you if you're working audio was, I didn't notice it. And so that means like it didn't sound bad. It's when it sounds good, you don't notice it. So that's what we've we went into with these specials, trying to keep the budget low, but good enough that you don't notice. You know, like we went the extra mile to get these 4K cameras that look great,
and
we hired an amazing
great cinema lenses.
Oh, incredible cinema lenses. All not, I mean, they're
all
expensive.
All within budget.
Though. Within the budget. And we're not going to say how much. It was really low.
Yeah.
And, you know, the audio team as well, like, just did a killer job. So you look at this thing and it looks a lot more expensive than it was.
Right.
It's just, you got to know, you know, have the right connections in a way. And it's a lot of,
well, I wouldn't say the right knowledge.
Well, that's what I was going to say is,
you know, we've not to pat ourselves on the big old asses, but you know, the knowledge that you and I have, gain through the years really helped us.
Well, yeah, I mean, it just like when we start off talking about how you met Mark and whatnot, and you know, you were working for Howard Stern, and I was working under
a car as a mechanic.
Yeah, no, I was just working under cars.
Yeah, and I was like, "What are you doing?"
Like where
sir?
I lived.
And you're like, "I'm stealing whatever I can get my hands on."
Yeah, it was like one of those heist movies where like I'm an unlikely asset, and you're like, "I think I got a job for you."
And you went, "I told you I'm out." And I went, "Just one more, please." And you were like,
"I never worked with you before."
I don't think so. And then 3 days later, you just called me, and you were like, "What is it?"
Yeah,
and I was like, "I knew he'd be back."
In. But yeah, I mean, you like whatever job you had or I had. We were doing stuff on the side as well, and we were both working in production, but you're always kind of keeping your throwing arm strong and being up on the latest camera equipment and editing software and for fun, watching videos on lighting, on audio, on all those techniques. So it's in a sense, it's all pre-production work. You know,
right.
When you get to that point, it's like you were saying, I wasn't, and I'm speaking as you, I wasn't nervous when you were filming and having to direct at the same time looking at the monitors, because it also, I worked with you at that time.
We were doing
that on the daily. So you were filming and having to look at monitors, and I was doing the same thing too.
Right.
So when you're kind of faced with these issues and you know, a bunch of issues come up with any shoot, and you just have to kind of troubleshoot and power through and figure it out.
Yeah.
And that's where the knowledge comes in. But a lot of times there's stuff that you've run into before and it's not a big deal because you knew how to circumvent that issue and create a good product regardless.
Yeah. I mean, because you and I, we worked with just tons of different budgets, you know, whether it was on, you know, different commercials or shows. And we've just sort of been around to a certain extent. And again, with different people and producers, and that just helps you so much in realizing how to communicate with somebody, how to talk to somebody, and how to also keep your cool and how to figure out things. Even as small as in, I think it was Joe List's special, that one of our wires was short and we needed a longer wire to get to the monitor, because we're trying to keep budget short. So, you know, we had to make a run. I think Cam made a run, I think the Best Buy day of, just to get the wire. I mean, you know, these are things obviously that happen on regular movie sets all the time, but the thing is, we don't have an abundance of wires. We're down to the wire, the show. But we're down literally to a wire because we're trying to keep budget tight, and you can't be like, okay, it's X amount. You know what? Actually, we went over because it was this amount day of. You know, like, that's not how these sort of ones went. You know, we had to keep whatever the budget is. We had to keep our word on what it was going to cost.
Absolutely.
But as stressful as any of these might have been, the best part is that at the end of the day, they were comedy. So there was that part where you're like, okay, like, even though we're filming this and, you know, we're shooting this, and I'm still genuinely laughing. Like, and especially because I really like all three of these guys. Like, honestly, if it was somebody I didn't like as much, I might not do it because I want to be able to laugh, and I want to be able to, you know, have a good time to a certain extent. I mean, you know, it's not like I do what I choose. I mean, I do what I have to do. But in these cases, I was just so grateful to work with all three of these people. I'm like, wow, like, huh? Like,
yeah. I mean, again, all three of them are genuinely nice guys, and were not a headache at all to work with. They were really great to work with and really funny. And like we were saying earlier, you have to kind of, you know, you listen to, like, we went to the club to listen to them try out the material they were going to do for the set.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
We listened to other kinds. So again, that pre-work, like getting into their material, listening to it.
Yeah, finding their voice, seeing when they're going to pause.
And seeing their mannerisms. And then you plan, okay, well, we can have cameras this way because, you know, Sam doesn't really move that much. He does this. And then post-production, you know, you better like the comic because you're going to be spending days cutting
jokes
listening over and over and trying to decide why is this joke better in this show than it was the second show, and why does this angle tell the joke better?
Right.
And you have to constantly rewind, watch. And at least for me, I you could speak on Mark's. I didn't get any fatigue with Joe's special because it was so funny, and each time it just cracked me up. It really wasn't a bother, and I'm sure with yours it seems the same with Mark's, that there was no there was no real pressure on me during editing either. There was a lot of trust in what I was going to be cutting and what I was working on. And by the time I sent my edit, there were very little notes.
Yeah. Same with mine. We Mark and I had very little back and forths. I think we maybe had like two big long exchanges of like, you know, emails and stuff like that and some phone calls or whatever, maybe FaceTimes. I can't remember, but I loved cutting them. I would cut these guys over and over again with knives. No, I'd cut their specials over and over again. It was just so funny. I guess I regret us not taking on Sam's edit only because he did ask us if we wanted to do it. My only regret is that because I loved it so much, I wanted to hear it more. That's my only regret. That's the only reason why. But at the time we were just so busy, so we weren't able to cut it. But I love the way it came out. But yeah. I just and then it's also funny is that we were in talks to do a whole nother special, literally as we were doing Joe's, approached to do another one, but unfortunately, Corona happened, so these were canceled, and now you can't go inside anywhere as of right now. To do comedy, so we're sort of waiting and seeing what happens there. Trying to do something new with Sam, but as far as these specials go, I think my big takeaway on how, again, to reassess that question of like the directing part of it, it comes down to all those things we talked about, especially this budget wise. If it's not this budget wise, your directing role or producing role is going to be completely different than what we said. You would probably have a lot more free time versus us being multiple roles. And I didn't mind it though at all. And I don't think you mind it at all, but only because you don't really get that unless you're, a major comic where you can cut your own thing and edit it and film it and all that other stuff, like a Louis C.K. type thing. So it is cool in this sense, and I would love it if it remained this way, where, you know, you and I and have our own crew and have our own budget, and we just get to, you know, keep doing these because you get a final cut in the sense, and you go, wow, cool, and then you're proud of it. You don't have to go, damn, like, why was that put out and has my name on it, and I didn't, you know, make it this way. But we did make it this way, and that's why I was really excited to have these come out.
Well, yeah, I mean, it goes back to your point of you better want to do it, and you better like what you're spending your creative energy on, because, you know, you and I have full-time jobs, and we've had many jobs. You get burnt out a little bit because you're spending all day giving your creative energy. We work in production. So, whether you're shooting or editing and stuff like that. And a lot of times, you know, you don't really like what you're shooting, and you don't really like what you're editing, but it's your job and you want to obviously make it look and sound and feel as good as it possibly can. And that takes time and that takes focus. And it drains you. So when we did these, it was all in our own free time, and it was a lot of work. Right. But it was worth it because we really liked the comics. We liked their material, and it was a great challenge to kind of reinvigorate creative energy. And again, it's something else that will help you in the future. One special led to the next. One small gig after college leads you to the next gig, and so on. So every job, every opportunity, you learn something new, you meet somebody new, and you fail and you learn from that thing. So and I'm sure you've done the same thing. I took a lot of freelance jobs early on that I didn't want to do, but it was just to get, you know, a reel and to get experience and to get knowledge.
Yeah, I still take on freelance gigs that I don't want to do.
Yeah. So it when, and a lot of, I mean, that's most of the time. That's most of the production is doing stuff you really don't want to do, but you have to, you know, stay alive and eat. And
not only that,
cover
but
that big old ass of yours.
Oh,
yeah. With clothing.
But stay alive, like not even like physically alive. I mean, like stay alive in the business, obviously, of keep your brain keep going creatively and wanting to do that. And a fun payoff of these ones was, you know, the Times Square advertising that they did and other places and posters and stuff like that. That was fun because, you know, you go, okay, cool. Comedy Central bought these and, you know, let's see what they, you know, they do about it. And they did a good marketing for, I think a good amount of marketing for these specials of, you know, online and, you know, articles and all these other places that picked it up, and the Times Square billboards and stuff like that. And, you know, my next thing is that I hope that we cut more of their stuff and film more of these three guys and, you know, and more people. You know, I'd love to obviously keep doing those.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody. You know, don't forget to subscribe wherever you can, wherever you listen to podcasts. And Believe.com, BLEAV.com is where you can subscribe to us, or on iTunes, Spotify, you know, the whole deal. But yeah, we want to give a special thank you to Mark Norman, Sam Morrell, and Joe List for allowing us to be a part of their specials. And you know, again, very grateful, and thank you for everything you guys have done. That was for your butts and balls,
and I'm hugging, but there's not a sound for that.